Hello everyone, my name is Aarti and this is the Mahabharata. Episode 47, Gambling 2.0. Also available online at www.themahabharatapodcast.com or facebook.com/themahabharatapodcast. Our last episode left the Kaurava court scratching its head, stymied by Draupadi's brain tickler of a question. Does a man who's lost himself have anything to lose? Never mind the substance, the assembly can't even decide if it's a riddle or a point of law. Even as law, though, the answer is not obvious. Ancient texts seem to agree that a slave can't own property, but is a wife property? Like a piano or a bullock cart? The heads at the Kaurava court don't want to touch it, but we might take a crack at the question. We've gathered that a wife belongs to her husband. But in what sense? Can he sell her at a pawn shop? Because belonging is a curious word, isn't it? My socks belong to me, but not in the same way as my children. And I can belong to a sorority of supermodels, but can it trade me on the stock exchange? What does it mean to belong to a family? And what does it mean to belong to a man? One source of guidance on these questions is the Dharma Sutras and Dharma Shastras, somewhat misleadingly called the law books of ancient India. The most famous of these is the Manusmriti, composed by that putative patriarch of Hindu tradition, Manu. Manu insists women must never have legal independence. He says, and I quote, "As a girl, she must remain under her father's control, as a young woman under her husband's, as a widow under her son's. A woman must never seek independence." As an aside, yikes, 60 million plus Indian women never got the memo. I mean, without single women, what would our world be? No Mr. Darcy, no Rochester, no Little Women, no Nightingale of India, no Oprah? But back to our question. Draupadi can expect no support from Manu, for whom the status of wife is equivalent to that of a slave, with husband, master and lord. Which rather stands to reason, right? After all, the Manusmriti also wants a woman to be devoured by wild dogs if she commits adultery, and a fornicating Shudra to have his testicles fried in hot oil. But we digress. Now, the persnickety among us might argue, does it matter? Never mind the legal point, was it morally appropriate for Yudhishthira to stake his wife? Couldn't King Dhritarashtra just have waved his scepter and ruled it morally inadmissible? But where's the fun in that? The assembly breaks into fierce discussion, Vidura defending Draupadi and Karana turned solicitor representing the Kauravas. As we arrive back at the scene after lunch, the Kauravas are dancing around the Pandavas like they're caged tigers, poking and insulting them. Pick new husbands, Draupadi, Karna is laughing, who won't gamble you away. Duryodhana exposes his bare thigh to Draupadi, caressing it suggestively. Come, babe, sit on my lap. You belong to me now. Bhima instinctively makes to rise, but he restrains himself. Laugh now, you brainless pillock, he pronounces grimly. You're literally your mother's failed abortion. Have your fun today. But in the war that's coming, I promise you won't be laughing. I'm going to smash that thigh into 100 pieces, I swear to you. Your grandchildren will be assembling it like a jigsaw puzzle. As the impasse over Draupadi's question continues, dark omens appear in the sky above Hastinapur. Vultures begin circling the veranda, donkeys take up a chorus, and jackals howl so menacingly, the entire city halts in alarm. Everyone in the assembly stops talking. Suddenly we notice Gandhari whispering to the king. Had she been there all along, sitting behind him or observing from the mezzanine? A tense, muted conversation can be witnessed with finger wagging, emphatic gestures of helplessness, protest, then resignation. Dhritarashtra turns unhappily to his son. Duryodhana, you shallow-brained child, he repeats after Gandhari, have you lost your mind? How could you molest a woman in the hall of the Kurus, and that Draupadi, princess of Panchal, lawful wife of your cousins? What are you thinking? As the howls of the jackals grow louder, Dhritarashtra finally snaps into it and tries hastily to placate Draupadi. You're the most virtuous of my daughters-in-law, Draupadi. I've always said so. So gentle and forgiving. Choose a boon from me, sweet child, and I swear you shall have whatever you ask. Standing still, disheveled, and in her one cloth, Draupadi folds her hands before the king. If you would give me something, father, I would choose that my son not be the son of a slave. Please release King Yudhishthira. Done, declares Dhritarashtra. Ask me something else. You shall have that as well. Draupadi bows. Please give me Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadeva, along with all their weapons. Along with, okay, done. Ask me again. But now Draupadi declines with dignity. That would be greedy. My husbands and their weapons are enough for me. Relieved she's not going to curse the lot of them, Dhritarashtra retires to his chambers. As the Pandavas gather their garments, the Kauravas mock them. Such great heroes, taunts Karna. They need a woman to save them. Draupadi is the salvation of the Pandavas, folks. They were a sinking boat in the ocean, but Draupadi towed them to shore. But back in his room, Dhritarashtra's pacing. The evil omens had alarmed him, and now he's filled with dread. He remembers the prophecy at Duryodhana's birth. Jackals had howled then, too. Donkeys had brayed in protest, and vultures had circled forbiddingly, warning the new parents of the baby-faced villain they were harboring. Now, in the quiet of his chambers, the full horror of the day starts unfolding upon Dhritarashtra. While the gambling was on, the intensity was intoxicating, and he'd gotten carried away with the adrenaline rush. Now he's reflecting upon the day with apprehension. My brother's children, how will I ever live this down? There was cheating. We skewered them for every last penny. We stripped them of their clothes, reduced them to slaves. And what we did to their wife? He shudders. She's a princess, King Drupad's daughter, and I sat there while my sons dragged her in by her hair like a thieving servant girl, tried to strip her naked. They'll never forgive me. Recalling Bhima's frightful threats of war, his vow to break thighs and drink blood, Dhritarashtra starts getting heart palpitations. That's why Draupadi asked for their weapons. That's why she disdained a third boon. She's confident they don't need more to destroy us. In mounting fear, Dhritarashtra sends for his lawyers. Then he summons Yudhishthira. Getting straight down to business, he tells him crisply, Yudhishthira, I give you my leave. You're free to go. I restore to you your kingdom and all your treasure. Go in peace. While a startled Yudhishthira is reeling from the swing of the pendulum, the lawyers present him the papers. All wagers have been nullified. The dice game is represented as a friendly family tournament. And on the final page is a clause committing Yudhishthira to peaceful comportment, desisting from any acts of retribution. Good people don't plot revenge, okay, my son? They remember only the good things. Dhritarashtra tries to reframe the day's events. I permitted the game only to assess the relative strengths of my sons. You're no less to me than Duryodhana. You shouldn't doubt it. It was supposed to be harmless fun, but it went too far. Don't brood over it, okay? Duryodhana's a foolish child. He just went overboard. But you're the elder. Don't stoop to enmity. Think of me, your old blind father, and your mother Gandhari. Dhritarashtra speaking with such sincerity, he's almost convinced himself. Go home to Indraprastha and rule your kingdom in peace. No hard feelings, all right? He speaks to Yudhishthira affectionately. Now, I know what you're thinking. Run, don't walk, Yudhishthira. The great gods have saved your bacon. Take the paper, don't look back. That sky-falling calamity narrowly averted. All you've lost is dignity. Take the dispensation and resolve to tear off your arm and feed it to hungry hyenas before you ever touch dice again. But when was life ever that simple? As the Pandava motorcade pulls out of the gates, the hair-pulling second of the Kauravas goes running to his brother Duryodhana. "You'll never believe what the old man has done," he exclaims, panting. "He's given up everything we won, all the kingdom, all the gold, everything we won with such great effort. He's returned it all. What are we going to do?" The Kauravas are appalled. "All our efforts gone to waste. How could Dad do such a thing?" Duryodhana, Karna, and Shakuni march upon Dhritarashtra urgently. They find him seated in the veranda, enjoying a nice afternoon coffee with Gandhari and Vidura. "How could you?" cries Duryodhana, ignoring the others. "After all that work, we had it all in our hands. There was nothing left to do. We destroyed them." But Dhritarashtra has been well and truly spooked by the omens, not to mention unsettled by Draupadi's creepy refusal to take the third boon. Who does that? Any sane person would have tried to bundle the boons. "I've had my first wish ready for years, just waiting for the occasion. All my wishes should come true, with two-step verification in case I misspeak." But no, she'd refused everything other than her husband's and their weapons. She hadn't even asked for their kingdom. That level of confidence is terrifying. Realizing they can't simply braid him into action again, they decide to play up his fears. "Dad, you've released them and I get it. You felt under pressure. But think about it. Do you think they're just going to let this go? Not a chance." You can bet that's the conversation happening in the camp right now. How to get revenge. "I considered that," Dhritarashtra counters. "That's why I had him sign a release, holding all parties innocent of wrongdoing." "Oh, a release," scoffs Duryodhana. "That's going to hold Bhima off. We assaulted Draupadi, Dad, tried to strip her naked. You see him saying forgive and forget? You heard him. He's going to break my legs. He's going to carve Dushasana's heart out of his body. He's going to drink his blood. This is Bhima, Dad. It's not a joke." He knows of all the Pandavas, Bhima scares his father the most. "We leave this job half done at our peril. They're deadly cobras you've released from captivity. We've always learned that the only good enemy is a dead enemy. Better to have killed them than let them go." Dhritarashtra finds himself ambushed. "Well, it's too late now. I've already returned everything to them. They've already departed the city. You can't just kill them in cold blood, not with the whole city watching. Besides, they have all their weapons, and I specifically saw Arjuna tuning his famous bow. There's no chance we'd win in a war. Let it go." "No, we can win," Duryodhana insists. "We don't need a war. Invite them back for another game." "Oh, for Pete's sake. No, this one will be different, Dad, I promise. Just one throw. No drama, no Draupadi. One throw, winner takes all." He explains the new idea to his father. "One throw. Winner takes all, loser goes into exile. No humiliation, no slavery, no nonsense. What do you say, Dad? We'll make a game out of it." Dhritarashtra listens guardedly. Seeing he's getting traction, Duryodhana and the others get creative. "Okay, what do you think of this? We'll play for each other's kingdoms. We've got Uncle Shakuni, so there's no chance we'll lose. The loser goes into exile for 12 years, plus another year in hiding. It'll be like a hide-and-seek game. If he gets caught, the whole 13 years starts over again the same way. It'll give us time to solidify our hold on the kingdom, ingratiate ourselves with the people of Intraprest, and 13 years is not a crazy long time. Still allows them to feel like they have a kingdom, but are on a long vacation. What do you say? I say there's no way Yudhishthira is ever returning here again, Dhritarashtra retorts caustically. He will, insists Duryodhana. Filial piety, you see. The Dharma king will never refuse his elders. Gandhari has been listening quietly, along with Vidura. Though she has much influence over the king, she keeps her counsel in public and rarely reveals her cards. But now she speaks. Her brother Shakuni has been the instrument of this whole debacle, and in tacit rebuke to him, she addresses her husband. Don't do it. Who would breach a dam that's already closed? Who would blow into a dying fire? Let it go. This was a dangerous game to begin with. We've earned infamy among our friends, risked alienating our allies. We don't want an uncle. Dhritarashtra is caught in the middle. His wife is talking sense, but as usual, his desires with Duryodhana, and he can never deny his firstborn anything. It'll be okay, babe. If our line's fated to end, how can I possibly stop it? The opening shot of Saving Private Ryan is a scene on the beach of Normandy. American troops are facing blistering machine gun fire. Legs are being blasted off, chests blown open. One man is trying to contain his intestines in his body, a look of confusion on his face. Another young man gets hit in the head with a bullet. Then he realizes his helmet has saved him. In wonder, he removes his helmet to marvel at the thing that saved his life. And a moment later, a bullet goes through his head. Watching Yudhishthira as he returns home from the spectacular horror show of the day reminds one of that scene on Normandy Beach. He's escaped ruin by the most slender of probabilities. Not only is he a free man, along with his brothers, but amazingly, his world is still intact. He still has a magnificent kingdom, his stupendous wealth. Literally nothing is lost except his pride. What would compel him to gamble again? The great scholar Hans van Buitenen had a theory we can discuss next time. But for us right now, who can stall the wind? Who can hold the rain aloft, soothe the thunder, stem the rushing tide of time? Not Yudhishthira. When the messenger arrives, inviting him to another game, against every sane instinct, he agrees. They face off again, Yudhishthira on the one side, looking guarded, Shakuni on the other, looking like a cat about to enjoy a delicious dinner. All attention is focused on the table. They throw, and to the astonishment of the entire crowd, something wondrous happens. Yudhishthira's one die lands on a corner, like an ascetic standing on one toe. Then it topples down onto a six. Yudhishthira wins. He wins. Can you believe it? He wins. The Kauravas have to go into exile. All 100 of them. 12 years in the forest, a 13th in hiding. Amazing. Okay, fine. You got me. That's not what happens. Against all rational counsel, Yudhishthira plays one more game. And loses. In our next episode, we'll assess what date with destiny was Yudhishthira so eager to keep that he would literally gamble away his family's future? What did his brothers say? His mother? His wife? What was Draupadi's reaction to, "Hey hun, I'll be home late, don't wait up"? And we'll have questions, so many questions. Where will they go? How will they live? What happens to Kunti and Subhadra and Draupadi? What happens to their children? What is this mysterious dice game, and how can I learn to play like Shakuni? And still we ask, where's Krishna? Let's find out next time if you'll join me for another episode of the Mahabharata.